Ice Cube Podcast, episode 488, WRTC 2026. Well, hello, Amateur Ham Radio enthusiasts, and welcome to episode 488 of your ICQ Amateur Ham Radio podcast. This special episode has been released following our visit to WRTC, the World Radio Team Championship event that took place in White Boston Lakes in the UK this previous weekend. Myself, Colin M6POY, was joined by Martin, M1MRB, and Chris, Mike Zero Tango Charlie Hotel, as we bring you a flavour of what happened at the WRTC 2026 event. The longer form interviews will be available on our icqpodcast.com YouTube channel for you to check out the longer interviews that we had with the people we spoke to at the show. As always, please consider your ICQ podcast and, as I offer your donations, show the value for value for the feature that we've produced today and all the other previous episodes. We ask you to visit icqpodcast.com/donate and say send the value our way. To give you an idea, for example, unfortunately this weekend, due to an accident, we lost a €1,000 video camera that will need to be paid for out of our own pockets. So this is why your donations are vitally important to keep our work going, as our personal costs increase all the time. So please do support your ICQ podcast by going to icqpodcast.com/donate. Right, we're going to join our features episode where we're going to look at, WRTC 2026, and I hope you enjoy the flavour we bring you. A summer weekend in southern England, resplendent, basking sunshine, never a guarantee, but Mother Nature is looking down with love on the ham radio community, flooding the fields and operating sites with sunshine and temperatures of 29 degrees, that's 84 degrees Fahrenheit. If you've never followed contesting before, this is the event to start with. The World Radio Team Championship is the Olympics of amateur radio. The world's best two-person teams compete on identical stations on a level playing field over one relentless 24-hour period. You don't need to be a contest to appreciate what's about to unfold. At Competition HQ, organisers mill around the auditorium. The calm before the hive of contesting begins. Special event stations are being configured. Last minute rig and equipment tests are underway, then transport travel. Roadworks have sprung up overnight and teams are getting lost on their way to the sites. Calls fly to the organising committee. Transport is rerouted, problems resolved. With so much at stake and so much to do, the committee's calm is impressive. So much of this is only possible through the goodwill of the ham radio community. Alongside commercial sponsors, clubs and groups have sponsored the individual operating tents with donations to the event of up to £10,000. Poignantly, some tents are sponsored by the memory of contest operators who are now silent key. And it's not only financial support, an army of volunteers has been at work all week, building stations and giving the competitors the best possible platform to excel. The ICQ podcast owned Chris Howard, M0TCH, is among them. He gave up the weekend before the event to help build and spoke with the volunteers manager, Chris and Pauline Kirby, about putting the competitors' stations together.
Started the planning. We've been building the station building teams. We've been fostering a good team spirit. And we started that planning, about 4 months ago with a big spreadsheet. Fantastic turnout of volunteers. In total, we've had 58 volunteers. Not everybody on the same day, but at the peak time, which was, I think, Wednesday, this two, three days. What day is it today? About Wednesday, 4 days ago, we had about 42 people working at the same time. 42 out of 58 volunteers. I'll just say how the planning worked. The number of volunteers grew as we got nearer to the competition. A week ago, I perhaps had about 32 volunteers, so we put four teams together. The following day, four teams, but the Monday, the Tuesday, we expanded that up to six teams. And hopefully, for the teardown operation that starts after the contest, we're going to have seven teams on the go, all at the same time.
And we should explain, we're recording this actually during the contest. It's now started. It's 4:20 on Saturday, so the contest is actually happening right. A little bit of a lull, I think, in activity right now while the contest is happening. I guess that it's going to spike afterwards, but I know you guys have been really busy over the last 24 hours. Before we get on to that, so we've had all these stations there, but how many stations had to be built all together?
Okay. We were tasked with building 55. There are 50 competitive stations, and Mark Haynes, the chairman of the organising committee, he wanted some spare ones built as well. We've achieved that. We've got about 53 at the moment, and then we've got spare parts that we could put together if we start. We haven't needed to use any of the spare sites yet.
Hopefully we won't.
But they are there in case we need them.
Got it. And what's each station comprised of? What has each station, what have they got?
Right. I can't go through all the technical detail, but there's the antenna, and the antenna is a multi-band, a tri-band antenna. There are three elements for 10 metres, two elements for 15 and two elements for 20. And then that's at the top of the mast on a rotator, which we've had to fit. And then the teams get two dipoles, one for 40 and one for 80. So that's the sort of radiated side of it, mast, antennas. Then there's all the other stuff. Gazebos to be erected, tables to be put in the gazebos, chairs, every chair has to have a cushion. What else have we had? Oh, yes. Can I mention the facilities? We're out in the public, so we have to provide a loo tent with a toilet. The competitors are there for 24 hours. Whether they take a break from their operating is entirely up to them, but we provide the facility if they want to. What else? Generators, cables.
So everything that's required to run a station, but a lot of stuff. I mean, as you know, I've been volunteering as well. I think it took about 3 hours for us to put up each of those.
Yeah,
it's quite a lot of work.
A lot of heat. And also each of the team were provided with all the equipment, and that had to be allocated and taken to every single site and delivered. And then site builders went off to...
Delivered to the right site at the right time. They've been a fantastic crew of the station builders. I created a WhatsApp group because I wanted them all to be able to chat to each other, but also I wanted a means of being able to send messages out in case there was a sudden change. And there have been one or two minor changes, but the WhatsApp group has been fantastic. They've all joined in, we've shared photographs, and I've still been able to get the occasional important message across, Chris. You'll have seen them, won't you?
I'm on the group myself, absolutely. Competition, certainly from my perspective, every station that was being built, it wasn't in a rush, it was done very carefully. We tested all the aerials, we made sure that the SWR was correct. If it wasn't, we'd tweak things, that sort of thing. You know, everything had to be fair, so all, you know, the aerial pointed exactly the same direction as all the other stations. It was all built, you know, as a manual that someone spent a lot of time, I imagine, writing, that we made sure was followed. So, you know, I can be certainly from the ones I was involved with, can be, you know, say hand on heart that everything was equally, you know. And of course, the, you know, the competitors didn't know which station they're going to get. It was all randomly drawn. So I think we can say with a lot of certainty that actually it's a very, very fair contest, and a lot of effort's being done to ensure that fairness is there.
From headquarters, we head into the battleground, spread across the northern home counties and East Anglia. Each location hosts a number of operating stations, at least 500 metres apart, with teams assigned to them by random draw. Along with a station, each team receives a special competition call sign. RSGB General Manager Steve Thomas, M1 Alpha Charlie Bravo, and also volunteer for the WRTC 2026, tells us how the call signs are chosen.
So what we wanted to do, you will have heard, whenever we talk about WRTC, we call it the level playing field. So out at the contest sites, they've all got the same antennas, the same mast, same generator, same tent, same tables, all of that. And all they do is they bring their own radios. So that gives, and they're in the same location, same part of the world, and very close around East Anglia. So we call that the level playing field that tests the skill of the operators. But of course, if you've got a range of call signs and they're all different sizes, different lengths, different complexities, if you like, that that changes that. So we wanted to get some nice simple ones, nice short ones that were attractive. So yeah, when you go on the bands, short calls are often attractive, but they're very quick to send as well, both voice and CW. So we wanted some nice short calls, and we wanted something unique, attractive, that meant people wanted to work those stations, because that helps as well in the contest. Yeah. You know, there's a whole load of factors here. So I spoke to Ofcom some time ago. It took us about a year to have this conversation, and said we wanted something really attractive. And the previous WRTCs, a lot of them had managed to get special call signs. Yeah. So I spoke to Ofcom about all of these things and said what we'd really like is, I think we went originally for four different blocks. So we were looking for, you know, 26 is a block,
yeah,
A to Z, right? But then when we did some calculations on that, the statistics, once we'd taken out the ones that were complicated, so looking at the number of syllables to say, if you're doing a voice, you know, voice contact, the number of syllables to say the call sign. And then when you start thinking about the CW, the length of the CW, the number of bits in it, then in order to get a level playing field, you've got to start taking some of the complicated ones out. So we knew that four groups really wasn't going to be enough, which is how we ended up with seven. So, but I have to say, the conversation with Ofcom, they sort of replied, I told them what we wanted, they said, you want what now? You know, there was really, you want seven blocks of call signs that we haven't used before. Now, it is true that we've used, so we've got MB1 through to MB7, yeah, and then one letter on the end. So MB1A through to MB7Z. So that gives us, checking my figures here, 182, I hope. But by the time we took out all those complicated ones, it meant that we could bring it down to 50 call signs that were really within sort of one bit or one syllable of each other, so that all of those 50 teams out there have got this level playing field with the call signs as well. So we've really tried to make this contest the test of the operators, and this played a really big part in it.
At every location, a station manager stands ready to assist the teams. We met up with James at the Houston site, who told us what's involved.
So we've got four particular teams here from different parts of the world, and we just one of the things to do is just to keep them fed and watered, make sure they've got everything they need. We've had some seriously hot days yesterday, and today's quite hot as well. So a lot of taking water out to them, we've taken tea and coffee out to them, that sort of thing, keep them going. But also, just, are there any issues with the setup? Any issues of things they need, which could be, you know, serious radio equipment or some string. So if we haven't got it, and we had some bits with us, but if we haven't got it, we've got a headquarters very nearby. We'll either drive down there and collect it for them, or give them a call and get them to deliver it to us. So that's the first part of it. But the main part now that the competition has started, is to make sure that the generators continue to work. So on a regular basis, we've got to go around and check the petrol levels within the canisters. We've got 30 litres spare here, and we'll keep topping them up as we go through the night, just to make sure they've always got power.
That's
the main thing now.
That sounds like a very busy job for you.
Yeah.
And before we started recording this, I also believe that you've been doing hospitality to these guys and taking them tea and one thing and another.
Yeah, they were very, very surprised that we actually took them biscuits as well, tea, coffee, biscuits, and gave it to them. Some of them are so focused on what they're doing, they didn't even notice, but the others were very pleased to see that and very gratified.
Every station starts from the same baseline, antennas covering multiple bands, and seats for the tour operators and referees, all inside a tent that is surprisingly cool. Each operator plugs in their preferred radio and setup into the provided station, capped at 100 watts of power, alongside huge quantities of water and personal snacks. The complete absence of sleeping bag tells you everything. These operators intend to pull the full 24-hour shift, which means no sleep for the referee either. The operating speeds on both Morse code and voice are beyond impressive, as you would expect from the creme de la creme of our hobby. The sanitation conditions, on the other hand, are decidedly basic. There's an early wobble at one station. The generator has an airlock, The site manager swings into action, relaying the problem by radio naturally, and a replacement is dispatched immediately. But in general, there is no chaos, even as the points rack up and the multipliers hit. With sips of water in between releases of the foot pedal and nibbles of fruits and nuts, the soundscape is simply this: fast operating, the tapping of contacts into keyboards, and the gentle rustle of tent sides open to the breeze, keeping operators and equipment cool. Overnight, EU Team 3 lead the field, while we mere mortals steal a few hours sleep. Scoring is provided by the World Radio League, updated constantly throughout the contest, with a failover system at every site to make sure not a single log contact is lost. Anyone, anywhere in the world, can follow the leaderboard live. James Cribbs, November 0 Whiskey Romeo Lima from the World Radio League, tells us about the scoring system.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been a crazy 48 hours. This is the first interview I'm doing post-event, so it's great to speak with you. I've just sort of been in the hole for the last 48 hours managing all the infrastructure, but it went great. You know, it's quite a complex operation. You know, you have these 50 Raspberry Pi scoring computers that are scattered across these 50 stations all around, you know, the whatever region you call the region of England we're in right now. What would you call it?
Different counties.
Here and connected over cellular networks. But if I could just, you know, briefly give sort of an overview of what the system is. There's 50 Raspberry Pis that are the scoring computers that sit at each contestant station. Those Raspberry Pis are running just a local network, a DHCP server that assigns IPs to the other devices. They're all connected via just an Ethernet switch there locally. And then we wrote a custom piece of software that sniffs UDP broadcast data on the Pi and then transmits it over the cellular network back to our centralized servers, cloud servers for all the scoring and things. And so I would say, you know, first of all, we're standing on the shoulders of giants here. I think each WRTC has progressed the scoring technology a bit and a bit and a bit. And I think we've done a good job this year, and you know, in collaboration, of course, with the WRTC team and many of the other folks involved, and Andy G4PIQ, who's really our network guy, and you know, building those pies and things like that to create something that's really unique. We received over 250,000, about 258,000 QSO data, not just score, but the actual QSOs themselves over cellular network, and the pies performed excellently. We didn't have any memory or CPU issues out in the field, and then all of that came back to the centralized scoring, where we were able to, you know, build a really nice engaging front end, which I've heard from so many people that, you know, who maybe have a spouse or a friend who's not a ham radio operator, and they said thank you for that, because my spouse at home was able to watch the scoring and you know, see my face on the scoreboard and click in and see some statistics and follow the live commentary. So we really wanted to nail the technical part as much as possible and accurately receive the QSO data and do our best to report accurately on the score live as much as possible. But there is an adjudication process afterwards that's separate from what we do with the live scoreboard. That's what handles, you know, Trey and his team. They do a lot of log checking and review, and they have a separate process for that. But we wanted to try to accurately track the score as much as possible, while at the same time giving a very updated and enhanced UI for hams and non-hams alike at home to spectate and to enjoy the competition.
First thing in the morning, we check the standings, and overnight there's been a change. Defending champions, led by Yuri Onipolk, VE3 Delta Zulu, has powered through the night to top the table. Most teams are logging over 200 contacts an hour. Multipliers are king, and the gap at the top is closing. Whilst all this unfolds in the field, back at Competition HQ, Special Event Station GB26, Whiskey Romeo Tango Charlie has been busy too, making over 1,700 contacts during the 24 hours of operation. Jack is one of the operators from that station.
Hiya, my name's Jack. That's Juliet Alpha Charlie Kilo, call sign M9JCK. I'm 12 years old, and today I've been doing some operating of the special event WRTC call sign. So it's been very fun.
Hotel Studio 1, Mexico, Mexico, your 59027. Thank you, you're all set. Indian Uniform 2, Victor Whiskey Kilo, your 59027.
The competition ends and the gladiators return to the hotel headquarters. The referees settle into the final task, validating logs and confirming scores. It's a long-deserved sleep for the competitors. It's the final day. Competitors and referees mingle, telling stories over beers and coffee. The buzz continues towards the evening's finale, the closing ceremony, dinner and awards. There are plenty of awards available. The SSB award goes to Mirko, 9A 6 kilo X-ray, and Dave, 9A 1 uniform November. The CW award goes to the wildcard team of Diego, Lima Whiskey 5 Hotel Romeo, and Manu, Lima uniform 9 Echo Sierra Delta. The multipliers award goes to the defending champions, Yuri, VE 3 Delta 2, and Yarek, uniform Whiskey 7 Lima Lima. The most accurate log with only a 0.4 error rating went to Dan, N6, Mike Juliet, and Chris, Kilo Lima 9 Alpha. For the up and coming generation of Radio Sport competitors, the youth winners were Keys, Whiskey 0, Alpha Alpha Echo, and Connor, Whiskey 4, India Papa Charlie. So on to the final three. In third place was Bracco, E77 Delta X-ray, and Sven, Delta Juliet 4, Mike X-ray. Second was Manfred, Delta Juliet 5, Mike Whiskey, and Yuri, Delta Mike 5, Echo Charlie. And the winners were defending champions, Yuri, VE3, Delta Zulu, and Yarek, Uniform Whiskey 7, Lima Lima.